Live and Lansing, Jack Ebling is on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, Jack and Scott Ebling and you, 1320 WILS. Very happy to welcome in our next guest, as we do each Wednesday at this time, Kyle Malin, the editor of the MERS newsletter and columnist for City Pulse. Hello, Kyle. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Jack?
Just fine. First of all, how important are lieutenant governor picks in a campaign?
I don't know if they're really all that necessarily earth-shattering unless you pick somebody completely horrible. You remember, I think the most press or the most vivid example is back when George Bush Sr. picked Dan Quayle, and there was this whole, oh my gosh, who is Dan Quayle? And then Quayle ended up being a bit of a bumbling moron. And, you know, that kind of haunted Bush, I think, during his term in office. And granted, Bush still won the first time with Quayle. But, you know, you just don't want somebody who's going to be a complete failure and brings a lot of baggage and a lot of controversy to your ticket.
All right. In terms of the candidates we have for governor, Rick Snyder and Virge Bernero, we have a selection. Brian Calley, state representative from Portland, as the Republican lieutenant governor candidate. And what does he bring to the ticket?
Well, I think he brings a bit of legislative experience, albeit just 4 years. So he can be called somebody who knows the process, but not necessarily an insider. I mean, he's really only been in Lansing for 4 years. He's youthful, so he's younger than I am, actually. So he's got a bit of excitement. He has maybe some... some idealism that things can be done in the legislative process that maybe somebody who's been around town for a long time would have skepticism to. I mean, I think also the youth creates a situation where Rick Snyder can maybe mold him a little easier than somebody who's been around the block. I mean, he's somebody that, would be maybe more open to Rick Snyder's ideas than somebody who's set in their own ways, so to speak. I think politically, I don't know if he brings necessarily a lot. I mean, he's kind of from the west side, if you say that anything west of Lansing is the west side, but he's not really a West Michigan guy. He's from Portland. Mm-hmm. So you can't really say he's going to bring that ultra-conservative Dutch vote with you. But, you know, he does have some Tea Party credentials. He was slated to be endorsed by the iCaucus, which is a National Political Action Committee. So he does bring that resume to the table.
I guess I am most familiar with him involving the Michigan business tax. Wasn't he the author of that?
Well, the short answer is no.
Okay.
Now, was he involved in it? Yes. Now, let me explain, and this, I'm sure that the campaign will have to do a better job in trying to diffuse this, but let me give you kind of the real answer to that. In 2007, when the Michigan business tax was created, all four caucuses sent a representative to the negotiating table. And the Michigan Republican House Caucus, okay, one of four, sent Brian Calley. Now, Brian Calley was in the minority. His role in actually crafting that piece of legislation was fairly minor. I mean, he interjected, I'm sure, some comments and represented what the House Republicans wanted. But remember, the Republicans were in the minority. The Democrats ruled the day on that. And so it was Paul Condino and it was Steve Beda, the state representatives at the time, who wrote the Democrats' policy. And then from there, it was meshed with what the Senate Republicans had. So did Calley vote for it? Yeah, I'm sure he voted for it. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm quite sure he did. Did he actually write it? No, I think that's a stretch to say he wrote it. I think that he was at the table and he represented views of the House Republican caucus, but you can't say he wrote it.
All right. You know how the Democrats are going to spin this, and they are already portraying Brian Calley as the architect of the Michigan business tax. That seems like an unfair link in your mind?
Yeah, you know, it is, because what it opens up is, well, you know, it's actually the Democrats who wrote the Michigan business tax, if you want to get down to brass tacks. I mean, they had the governor and they had the House Democrats, who were two legs of the three-legged stool who crafted this monstrosity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the Michigan business tax was Granholm's lingo, but they, you know, the final decision was to mesh basically two taxes together. I mean, the Senate Republicans had created kind of their own tax, and then the House Democrats had created their own tax. And in the spirit of compromise, what they did is instead of picking one over the other, they kind of created this hybrid of the two of them. So who was the author of the Michigan Business Act? Well, I suppose the legislature. I think maybe the Republicans and the Democrats share equal responsibility. And that's why I think it's kind of humorous to call him kind of the architect. I don't know if that's fairly accurate.
It's interesting to see legislation that everyone is running away from, as if it's an explosive device planted under the hood of a car.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it just kind of shows that it's not very popular, because really it's kind of a reworked version of the Michigan business tax, and that it's complex. I mean, the whole point of getting rid of the single business tax was to get rid of the complexity of it all, and instead what you ended up with was, in the spirit of compromise, a more complex tax. Now, you know, it could very well be that Rick Snyder picked Brian Kelly because he had experience in that process and knows exactly what not to do next time in crafting your own business tax. I think that's probably a pretty fair guess on my part.
We had Virge Bernero on the show Friday and yesterday, in fact. We had Rick Snyder on, and Rick Snyder had a lot of very nice things to say about Detroit Mayor Dave Bing and the importance of developing cities and curtailing urban sprawl. Today, Dave Bing announces his formal endorsement of Virge Bernero for governor.
Yeah, I just saw that. You know, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, at its core, Dave Bing, and I think any politician in Detroit, is a Democrat. And, you know, ultimately, you really do, in order to be a team player, have to support the Democratic candidate. And, you know, Dave Bing supported Andy Dillon in the primary, but obviously Andy Dillon wasn't successful. And I just kind of see this as a nice gesture leading into the Democratic convention that, hey, here's the leader, the political leader of the city of Detroit, supporting Virge Bernero. It's time for anybody who wasn't supporting Virge Bernero now to kind of bury the hatchet and get on board. And that's kind of how I read today's endorsement.
We don't know how successful Dave Bing is going to be as a mayor. We know he was very successful as a businessman with Bing Steel, etc. And we know he was a tremendous basketball player, Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But in terms of what an endorsement like this means, Kyle, does it have any legs in the city of Detroit?
Well, I don't know. Maybe not really. I mean, you know, the joke is always that endorsements always mean that you got the vote of the person endorsing you, and that's it. But, you know, in seriousness, what I think it does mean is that that there is a recognition in the city of Detroit that the political leaders are getting behind the Democratic nominee, as opposed to doing nothing. And doing nothing would mean that maybe voters in Detroit do nothing come election day. You know, remember that the legislative races, the congressional races that voters in Detroit were voting on in the primary were more important, because whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be in those races is going to win. I mean, that's a slam dunk. So the real fight was in the Democratic primary. Now, if you don't have any dogs in the gubernatorial race, if you don't care about the gubernatorial race and you live in the city of Detroit, you may not vote, and that's a danger. Jim Blanchard, back in his election against John Engler, it was blamed on the city of Detroit not getting out and voting for Jim Blanchard. And if Virge Bernero has any shot at all winning this election, he needs the city of Detroit to come out en masse in support of him.
You know, I'm watching a lot of the ads, Kyle, and we're starting to get them on television all hours of the day and night. And is any congressional district going to have more ads than the 7th with Tim Walberg and Mark Schauer? I've seen a lot of different spins on this.
I don't think so. The reason is because it's really the most competitive congressional district in the state, A, and then B, the number of stations involved and the number of media markets involved, I think, are fewer than the one in the first district, which is northern Michigan, where you have a couple media markets, as many as one, two, three, maybe four media markets to have to play. And now, obviously, it's cheaper than Lansing and, you know, Battle Creek, but you know, it just means also you've got an incumbent here in Mark Schauer who's got a lot of money in his campaign wallet, so he can spend a lot more. You know, unlike Gary McDowell, who's the Democrat in the first congressional district, which is up north, he's starting from scratch. I mean, really, in trying to get ads. And obviously, the Democrats in Washington are going to spend some money too. But,
right.
You know, Mark Schauer is going to have the Democrats in Washington spend money for him. And then plus, he's going to have his own money spending for him. So he's going to have a lot of money. And Wahlberg is going to have money from the Republican side. So the answer to your question is no. I don't think you're going to see any other congressional district in the state pour more money into this congressional race than the 7th.
We know that Tim Wahlberg is going to try to tie Mark Schauer to Nancy Pelosi and some of the unpopular Democrats in Washington. And now we have Tim Wahlberg being tied to a statement that Bush-era policies will help get the economy back on its feet. Democrats are trumpeting that. Are we having a Wahlberg-Schauer campaign, or are we having a Bush-Obama campaign?
Sometimes you got to wonder, don't you?
Yeah.
And but, you know, this is where we have to go, because these are the buttons that these candidates are having to push in
right.
order to try and cast the other in a negative light. I mean, who is more popular right now? Is it George W. Bush or is it Barack Obama in the 7th Congressional District? I think that's an interesting question. I'm sure both of these candidates have done polling to answer that very question. But it's fairly clear that they believe that the other is more unpopular.
Well, I know we can't get those two on the ballot in the 7th District, but I'd like to see some exit polling. I'm very curious as to the question you pose.
Yeah. So. Well, and you know what? I'm sure, you know, a Republican will tell you that Barack Obama is more unpopular than George W. Bush, and I'm sure a Democrat will tell you vice versa.
Kyle, great talking with you, and we'll chat again next Wednesday.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jack.
All right. Kyle Malin, the editor of MERS Newsletter, columnist with City Pulse. We'll be right back with another of Mid-Michigan's tremendous entrepreneurs, and that is Linda Hunt from Sweetylicious Bakery Cafe. I can taste that triple berry pie right now. We'll be right back on Ebling & You.